News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, coming to you each and every Sunday here on News Talk 580 KMJ and KMJ580.com. This week, we meet an octogenarian athlete, a Valley veteran of World War II who just returned from the Veterans Golden Age Games with quite the medal haul. You're going to love hearing about this, and that's not the first time he's competed in a veterans competition. Pretty talented guy that I welcome on the show today. Fresno's Al Shakwa is our guest. And Al, before we get into your time in the service during World War II, tell me about the veterans, the Golden Age Games. Now, this is the first year that you've competed?
This is the first year. Unfortunately, few veterans hear about the games. I just kind of accidentally fell into it because I sing at the geriatrics ward of veterans twice a month. Mm-hmm. And Tony came up to me and asked if I was interested. And then when she found out that at my age, in my age group, I would be throwing the shot and the discus and the bicycle, which is kind of rare for guys over the hill a little bit. And so that's how I got involved. And there were 30 or 31 of us that went to the games.
And that was in Indianapolis?
Indianapolis. And we left the Veterans Hospital by bus to San Jose. And then from there on, we got Frontier and went into Denver and then into Indianapolis. And it was a wonderful stay. I mean, the games were great. There were 775 athletes there. And my understanding, there were 1,000 different people helping.
Wow.
And they were wonderful. I think I told you when we talked, Paul, that I am low vision. And so my sight is kind of poor. When I get within about 10 yards of you, I'm okay. But they just, when they found out that I was low vision, they just say, where do you want to go, honey? And grabbed my hand and took me there.
Boy, talk about a hero's welcome in Indianapolis.
Huh? Really wonderful.
Now, the vision impairment with the shot and the discus, I can see how that's not a big deal because you're just chucking it as far as you can go.
Right.
But riding the bike, it seems to me the vision would play a role there.
It did play a bit of a role, but I stayed in the middle of the track. I didn't try to cut any corners, you know, shave off some time. And it was a bevel track, but I didn't get up high. I didn't get high. I just stayed in the middle. There was a white line, and I stayed on the white line. And my first race, the only thing I had a little problem with is my first race was at 6:30 in the evening, and my big race was at 11:45 at night.
Oh, wow.
And I was exhausted. I really was exhausted. But we ran it, and fortunately, I got a couple of silvers. I have to mention, though, that when I got home, one of my sons had gotten it on the Internet that I thought I had lost one race by 2 seconds and one race by 4 seconds. And he said, Dad, you lost the 4 seconds. It was 0.4 of a second.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of made me feel bad because I said, gee, just one more push on that pedal and I might have made it.
Well, that motivates you for next time.
Yeah, yep.
Do you plan on going back? Did you have that good of a time?
Yes, I plan on going back, Paul. It all depends on my vision. If they can find some miracle, something to help me. I'm not worried about, because I would still go the shot and discus and the bike races. That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is I can't see well enough to find my way around. Mm-hmm. And I always need help. And if I get any worse, I just don't want to put that on somebody. And I can't take my wife because Nancy is, poor baby, she's got her problems. So I have to depend. My roommate was wonderful. And he kind of really helped me along a lot.
We're talking to Al Shakwa of Fresno, a World War II veteran who just competed in the Veterans Golden Age Games, which is for veterans age 55 and over. So you waited a while before you got involved. If there's a veteran out there who's in that age group and who has never done this before, what would you say to him? Because there are a lot of different events. I mean, there's golf, there's swimming, there's just about any competition sport
checkers,
you can think of.
Ping pong, shuffleboard. There's, in fact, one of our members is 95 years old, and he's been going to the games, I think, for the last 10 or 15 years. But he's in checkers and dominoes and shuffleboard. Looks great. And my advice to them is go to the veterans if you're... See, you've got to kind of be attached to the Veterans Hospital here in Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
But if they have any questions, go to see Tony Lopez at the Geriatrics Ward. She's the lady that takes care of us and gets us all squared away for going to the games. And as you said, it'll be in Birmingham, Alabama next year. And the only problem that we have, Paul, is raising money because the veterans does not pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going out, so we have fundraisers. And this last year, it cost about $1,000 per athlete to go to the games. And Indianapolis did furnish the food. That we didn't have to, we had to pay for the hotel. And, of course, I think the plane fare was about $500.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll give you more, you at home, we'll give you more information later on the VA Medical Center in Fresno and who you can contact and how you can get involved with that. I'll give you the phone number in a little bit. But Al certainly had a good time, as you've heard. And tell us again which medals you won in which events.
I won a gold in the shot put, and I won a silver in the discus, and I won two silvers in the two bike races.
Had you ever thrown the shot in the discus before? Did you do it growing up?
60 years ago, Paul, when I was in college. I had a track and field scholarship under Flynn Hanner, and I threw the shot in the discus and the javelin. And I graduated in 3 years at Fresno State. And then coached for a couple of years. Well, 2 years in an elementary school. Then I went to Fowler High School. And then back into Fresno, where I spent 28 years at McKinley Roosevelt School District. And I went there as a seventh grade teacher. Moved up to vice principal, then principal of the upper grades. And retired as the superintendent of McKinley Roosevelt School District.
So 60 years between throwing a discus and a shot. Was it like riding a bike? Did it come right back to you?
Yes, it did. It really did. The only thing, I didn't feel comfortable doing the steps. So I actually just stepped into the shot and into the discus. I didn't twirl or do all the goody stuff that they're doing today.
And you still got a gold medal.
I still got a gold medal.
Wow. That is impressive. Well, you've heard a little bit about what he's been up to lately, but for the rest of this show, we're going to deal primarily with what he was up to more than 60 years ago as a young member of the U.S. Coast Guard. During World War II, and we'll talk a little bit about some of his other talents that have taken him to national competitions through the Veterans Administration. That includes his singing voice, and maybe we'll talk him into singing for you this afternoon. I don't think I'm going to have to twist his arm too hard. But let's talk right now, Al, about how you got into the service, first of all, and maybe even before entering the Coast Guard. I like to ask every veteran of World War II what he or she remembers about December 7th, 1941, where you were and how you heard about the attacks on Pearl Harbor.
Oh, that is vivid in my mind. We had gone, because at that time, we were playing Merced Black Sheep in basketball, which I lettered in basketball in high school, basketball, football, track, and tennis. And we had gone to Monterey and Pacific Grove for a four-day tournament. And on December the 7th, we were on our way back to Fresno, and all of a sudden it said, we interrupt this program to tell you that Japan has bombed Pearl Harbor. That's how I first knew about it. Of course, we shook because our coaches, then within 2 months, three of the coaches went into the service.
Mm-hmm.
Babe Atkinson was our basketball coach. He did not go, but because he was older than the rest of them. But that I'll never forget.
And what school were you playing for at the time?
Madera High School.
Oh, the Coyotes.
Coyotes.
All right. So you have a bus full of basketball players, and you hear this announcement.
Yeah.
What were the kinds of things you guys were saying to each other after that?
First, it's shock. You know, you can't believe. And then when, of course, some of them, you know, were seniors, and I was just a sophomore. And so some of them were seniors and already saying, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be a pilot. In fact, Bob Thede became an Air Force pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And several of them went into the Marine Corps. Many of them just enlisted within weeks after graduation.
Did it hit you at the time that this war was not going to be over very soon and that in all likelihood you might end up in it?
No. You know, because I had three of my brothers went in. And I couldn't fathom staying out. So as soon as I graduated from high school, I was 17 and a half years old. I said, I'm going into the service. So I drove my brother's car to Merced to enlist in the Air Corps. Well, I didn't make one of the tests. So the lieutenant in charge says, oh, come on, kid, come back tomorrow. He said, you only missed it by 2 points. But I was so dejected, I just drove right through Madera into Fresno, went to the Coast Guard, and enlisted. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
You think that's something that maybe saved your life?
Well, I think it's, well, definitely, you know, because they all call us heroes. We are not heroes, Paul. The heroes are over there in some island dead and buried.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the heroes.
The 400,000 plus who never came home.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And I say I love the Coast Guard because other than the one major battle in Okinawa that we were in where kamikazes were coming in on the, well, I think I told the Franklin was anchored just off of our starboard bow, and we were the largest ship in the harbor, so we towed her back to Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And then after we talked over the phone, I was trying to remember. I knew I had kept a little journal, mm-hmm. but hey, 65 years, it was gone. But I dug up a bag that they gave us, and I can't even read it, Paul, but as every port that we went in.
I'm looking at this bag right now.
I wrote them down. I didn't put down, of course, San Francisco when we hauled them out of there, or Norfolk, Virginia. But all the islands that we went, yeah.
I see Straits of Gibraltar, New Guinea, Leyte, Hollandia, Samar, English Channel, Saipan, New Caledonia, the Marshall Islands, Pearl Harbor, Okinawa, Marseille, Naples, Le Havre, Panama, Straits of Bonifacio, and the Caroline Islands, and Oweetok Atoll as well. That's a lot of traveling with the Coast Guard. So there's a lot of stories there that we're going to have time to get through. But right now, we need to take our first commercial break. When we come back, we'll hear about some of the stories behind those names scribbled on this six-decade-old bag that Al has with us in the studio today. Al Shakwa of Fresno, our guest today. We'll be right back with more Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Coast Guard veterans will recognize that as Semper Paratus, performed there by the local Sounds of Freedom band. You've heard me talk about a time or two. Enjoy playing their performances for you from time to time on this program. And I play that today because our guest is a Coast Guard veteran of World War II, Fresno's Al Shakwa. You heard him describe before we took that break about how he went to sign up for the Air Corps after graduating from high school, missed by a nose on the test, and instead of taking the test again, drove right past his hometown of Madera, threw into Fresno, and enlisted in the Coast Guard right then and there, and looks back on that as a wise decision. What was your welcome to the Coast Guard moment, though? I imagine it wasn't all fun and games the early days.
Well, of course, boot camp, we're all boots, you know, and the thing that I kind of remember, we went into, of course, get our first haircuts. And, man, those barbers were just shaving, you know. And this barber's sitting there, and he's talking to me, and he says, what's your name, kid? And I said, Shakwa, you know. And he says, you any relation to Johnny? I said, that's my brother. And he said, right, we were in a band together. He says, I play piano, and he played accordion. So when I get in the chair, I mean, I get the best crew cut that you could imagine. And everybody says, yeah, but he's your father. So that was one experience. And then, of course, going to quartermaster and signalman school, working a lot on the grinder. The grinder was a big open field that when we got into trouble, they would get everybody up, no matter what time it was in the night, pack your sea bags, and out on the grinder marching. And then I went to quartermaster school, and that was much different. I was one of the fortunate ones that graduated in the top 5%. And we were rated to third-class quartermasters, which didn't last very long because I went in the receiving station, Bay and Powell in San Francisco, and then I got my orders to go aboard ship. So the first time I get aboard ship, and they said, we're shipping out in the morning.
Wow.
And as soon as I get aboard ship, I mean, they put me on watch. So I'm scared. I'm 18 years old, and I'm pretty scared. And so then when we go out to sea, they put the quartermasters. I mean, usually there's just a seaman first class on the wheel. And so, but this time they put the quartermaster, which was me, on the gyro. And so we're heading out, and all of a sudden we're heading right towards the Farallon Islands. And the exec came up to me, grabs me, and threw me back against the bulkhead. And the chief, thank God for the chief, Chief Zelk was his name. And he came in and he said, "Just a minute, sir." And he put it on telemotor. Something had happened with the gyro. But we were headed right for the Farallon Islands. So,
and this is a pretty big ship we're talking about.
Oh, we're talking about a big ship that hauled 5,000 troops at a crack.
And this was the Admiral W.L. Capps?
Right. And that's the one that I was on for the duration of the war.
So you were going to crash it into the Farallons?
Well, heading straight in. Of course, I couldn't see where we were going. You know, I was following the compass. But he put it amidship, put on the telemotor, and just, there was no incident. I mean, the exec didn't apologize or anything, of course, but I didn't get in any kind of trouble. So then the things as we hit these different islands, and, you know, we work very hard because we were always topside with the officers. And so we were always in the chart room. So we knew exactly where we were going most of the time, and all the guys aboard ship would want us to say, "What's the ETA?" You know, because they'd put up big money, they would gamble.
They would bet on when you arrive,
when we're going to arrive, or when we depart. And of course, we were sworn to secrecy; we couldn't do that. But then announcements. The things that I remember the most is being topside. We stayed topside quite a bit because most of the time we were out where it was real hot. So we stayed upside and just swung our hammocks and slept in our hammocks up topside.
That's a different experience than
that was
most
different.
Men aboard a ship like that.
But we were up there, and, of course, we were very friendly with the cooks, so they'd always ship us eggs and fresh bread, and that's we lived on that stuff. Because, see, we were always at the gang plant when we hit port.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't treat the quartermasters pretty well. Well, we'd say, "Well, I think your stripes are a little dirty and they should be washed." So it was turnabout fair play.
You had a little bit of leverage there. A
little bit of leverage.
Now, as far as the purpose of your ship, you're transporting troops and supplies?
Yes. We'd get put into either San Diego or Honolulu, San Francisco, Norfolk, Virginia, and we'd load troops going overseas, and we would drop them in these different places that you mentioned there, as your good eyes picked
That's
it up.
Quite a list written on the side of that bag, yeah.
The sadness was what we had to haul back, Paul. I mean, they were the heroes that lived. And
give me a taste of that. What's something that sticks in your mind, an image of a soldier who had paid that kind of price for our country?
That had died?
Well, or even been wounded.
No, one that I remember most that came back. His legs were going to have to be amputated because they were badly. And he gave me a sword. He gave me a sword that he had taken off of a Japanese officer. And I got his name, and for years I had it hanging in my garage trying to get a hold of him, and there was no way. So I'm assuming, I never heard from him, I'm assuming that he died. But he had taken it off a Japanese officer. But it wasn't a samurai. It was a Civil War sword. Civil War. And I kept it for years. And then I had a neighbor across the street that he was a collector, and he just begged me. And he finally got me to, I gave him the sword. I couldn't get a hold of the fella.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a Marine. And so I traded with J.C. Cook, and he gave me a walking cane. An old walking cane that had a 30-inch sword in it. I don't know if you've ever seen one, Paul, but it's pretty exciting.
I'd like to use
that cane, but, you know, it's an illegal weapon.
Well, you could go do fencing at the next Golden Age Games.
Just about.
There you go. So a gentleman like that, you talked about, you see that his legs are going to have to be amputated. You can only imagine the kinds of things that he's going through. What does that do to you emotionally? Is that a motivational thing? Does that make you appreciate how fortunate you are?
Yes, all the time. Mm-hmm. All the time. That's what we all, that's why we always say we're blessed being on the Admiral Caps, because we our cruising speed was 20.5 knots. So we only went in convoy two times in the whole 25, 30 months that I was aboard ship, because we were fast enough to outrace any subs. We sighted several, but we could just run away from them. We never tried to exchange, except the only time that really our guns sounded was in Okinawa.
Well, we're going to get to that before we're done with this program, as we visit with Al Shakwa of Fresno, a Coast Guard veteran of World War II who served aboard the Admiral W.L. Caps, a transport ship, as part of his duties in the Coast Guard. Your day-to-day duties, you talked about being topside most of the time. What kinds of tasks were you assigned to? You got up in the morning, what did you have to do?
Well, it depended we were always on 4-hour shifts. So we'd have 4-hour shifts, and sometimes it was midnight to 4 o'clock, and our duties was to get the, to go with the executive officer and sighting stars with a sextant to see where we were, and then go into the officers' quarters there, an office-like, and then watch them chart different things. And we were always have to identify certain stars that we had on a huge wall map, that we would pick out the stars that we were under, and that's how we were navigating.
So a long time before GPS came around, and
yes,
some of today's younger people are saying, what are they talking about, looking at stars?
Yep.
But that was the prevailing technology.
That was it. And then always, we have to take the wind velocity every half hour. And we use the anemometer, get out, and get we'd have to do that. And we'd log everything. Everything that came up, we were in charge of logging. We never were on the helm.
What could be the consequences if you misread any of those factors, any of those indicators of where you are and at what speed you're going? What could happen if you guys screwed that up?
Well, I had never heard of any of them getting stuck in
the brig?
The brig. That we had one aboard ship.
Yeah.
And we had, in fact, a lot of the Army people and the Marines that we haul sometime spent their whole time in the brig. And we would josh about it. We'd actually make bets. We thought that they went into the brig mainly to keep from getting dumped in Okinawa or any of the islands that we were dropping them off.
I guess that is one way of preservation.
Yeah.
What I was getting at, really, and obviously I wouldn't want anyone to end up in the brig, but it seems to me that you would feel a sense of responsibility if you're the one who has to read the stars or gauge the wind and figure out those important numbers that are going to help chart the course. That's some pretty hefty responsibility. You better be right.
We better be right. And, and of course, we always had an officer with us, sometime two, an exec. We always had the exec aboard. But then there was several of the officers were wonderful. And they had gone up through the ranks. And they were the best officers. The ones that had just got out of the OCS, wherever it was, they felt a little bit superior to us. But believe me, they didn't walk the deck after dark. Now that sounds like a joke, but it isn't. They did not walk the deck.
And why was that? Why wouldn't they do that?
Because they were cruel to the seamen, especially the black gang. I'm not talking about the Negroes. I'm talking about the black gang. Those are the ones down in the engine room.
Mm-hmm.
And they would any little thing they would torment them over, and so consequently they got a name. And they didn't walk the deck at night.
Because if they did,
well,
they might get shoved overboard.
Oh, they might. We don't know if they would or wouldn't. But I'll tell you, if they told me don't walk the deck at night, I wouldn't walk the deck at night.
And especially on a big ship like that, where it can travel awfully fast.
Oh, yes. And then, of course, when we went over the equator, that was quite something. I mean, the torment, I mean, they literally, you were tormented to be And I can't even think of the name that they called us after.
The Shellback?
The Shellback, I guess so, after crossing the equator. But they dumped, the last thing was, if you could manage, they'd dump you over backwards in a pool of water. And if you survived the dunkings, then you became a Shellback.
So many different little things that you guys all went through. We need to catch another commercial here. When we come back, more with Al Shakwa. He mentioned Okinawa. We're going to hear that, hear about that in more detail, what he saw, what he remembers, and the emotion behind it all. Al Shakwa of Fresno, our guest today on Hometown Heroes. We'll be right back on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Tell us about your hometown hero. Email your story by clicking on the Hometown Heroes link at KMJ580.com.
How much do I love you? I'll tell you no lie. How deep is the ocean? How high is the sky? How many times in a day do I think of you? How many roses are sprinkled with dew? How far?
How many songs have you heard me play on this program that you listened to 50, 60, even more years ago? This time, it's not a song recorded way back then. That's a song recorded by our guest today, Al Shakwa. We talked about his competing in the Veterans Golden Age Games this past year. Before that, he even competed in Veterans Singing Contest, going all the way across the country for that as well. And I think hearing that song, How Deep is the Ocean, clearly inspired by his wife of 58 years, Nancy, that you can understand why Al has been in singing competitions before. Begs the question, Al, were you singing back in your Coast Guard days? Did you ever entertain your fellow sailors with
You know, I
like
never
that?
Did, Paul. I didn't. I think back about that, all that time aboard ship, and we had Roy Aubrey in our compartment, King of the Accordion and Wizard of Pantomime, and yet it just never occurred to me. I sang in high school, and then, as I went in through school, I did sing with when we were up at camp. I always sang, and then really start singing in 1989. My wife saw were the New Wrinkles, and I'm sure you've heard of the New Wrinkles show
sure
here in
have.
Town,
yep.
Paul. And I start singing with them for about 9 years. And they've been in, I think they just celebrated their 20th. I was there for 9 years. And then I like to see my audience. I like to see people when I'm singing. And if I see them falling asleep, then I can sing an upbeat song, and I kind of wake them up. But then I started just being on my own with a pianist, Don Oliver. And so we do these different gigs, and I just love singing. And they're Alzheimer's. A lot of mine are Alzheimer's. And then if you want to be sad, really sad, then you go to geriatrics and get up on my little stool and try to sing to those poor babies that are out there in wheelchairs or in gurneys. And I keep telling Tony, I said, Tony, do you really think you want me? She says, Al, they hear you.
This is at the VA Medical Center in Fresno.
That's the medical center, yeah. Right.
Well, I'm sure I speak for a lot of people when I say thank you for what you're doing there, and I'm sure that it is greatly appreciated.
And I love it.
And I think our listeners would love to hear you sing before the program's over, so you won't be able to see them, but they'll be able to hear you. So keep those pipes warm while we talk a little bit more about your service during World War II. We talked about you being on the transport ship, the Admiral W.L. Capps, AP-121. You're a quartermaster in the Coast Guard. You talked about Okinawa. Now, a lot of people know about Okinawa. They know when it happened, the last major battle in the Pacific. They know how bloody it was, particularly for the Marines initially.
Oh, yes.
How did you experience it? Walk us through that, maybe from the first you heard of it and the kinds of things that you saw and heard and experienced.
We had just unloaded 5,000 Marines when the kamikazes start coming in. And so then they start, I was on the starboard bow and taking azimuth circles. An azimuth circle is trying to direct our ship just by moving the azimuth circle as to where to go to keep out of harm's way. And that's when we wound up next to the Franklin, and she had taken three direct kamikazes to the loss of 1,200 to 1,500 sailors.
This is a big deal.
This was a big deal for us. Other than that, I can't tell you what happened to me when I was on the starboard bow, but I think I probably wet my pants because I was scared. We were scared. I mean, ships were getting hit all around us, and how they missed us, as large as we were, but they did. So then we had to load up.
So you're seeing kamikazes come in.
We saw them kamikazes coming in to the Franklin,
and
not to us.
And you're hearing shells,
and
artillery.
We're hearing shells all over, and it was very frightening, you know, for a young kid. I mean, we were all kids. In fact, one of the stories is Stan Stokes. He was from Fresno, an electrician. And when we were in high seas, and he'd have to climb up to fix a radar or something like that, we'd say, geez, God, you know, why do they send an old man? I mean, you know, Stan is almost 35 years old. But Okinawa was, and the reason I say the heroes are all over there is they didn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they're forgotten. They're forgotten.
Not by you.
Not by me, Paul. No. And this is the first, you know, I just really thank you, Paul, for calling me and asking me to be on your program, because this is the first time since I got back and since I got out of the service that I've actually talked about the service.
Wow. Well, I appreciate you doing that. I know it must not be easy then, and you're doing a great job so far. But that said, I want to ask you some more questions, so I hope I'm not too tough on you here. But you talked about the Franklin and the devastation there, all the lives lost, the three kamikaze hits. Obviously, there's a lot of smoke, there's a lot of fire, there's a lot of devastation. That ship was limping. And your job as the caps was to tow that all the way back to Pearl Harbor,
because we were the largest ship in the harbor, and they didn't want to wait. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could have gotten, you know, ships to come in and take her out. But it seems like it all, you know, we're talking about, oh, God, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half hour, no more than that. It's too difficult to try to remember how long we were there, just dodging in and out to pick up the injured Marines that we were taking back home.
Now, what are you doing during all that?
I was always on the starboard bow trying to direct. We had one quartermaster. I was quartermaster first class then on the starboard bow, and then we had quartermaster second class on the on the port bow, and we would azimuth in as to where the fire was coming from, directing our executive officer as which way to turn the ship. And it's surprising to put two young kids out there when you'd think that really an officer would be doing that, but see, they're on the helm. And they're directing the helmsman, so, and the helmsman is just a seaman first class.
Well, and as I understand it, the Franklin still had days to go. I mean, that wasn't it. It's gotten the nickname over the years, the ship that wouldn't die. And I guess part of your guys towing it back for them to repair it was...
They repaired it.
How it didn't die.
Yeah.
Where were you? Do you remember where you were when you heard that VJ Day was here, that the war was over?
Yes, I do.
I thought you might.
My good buddy, a signalman, Jerry Cardone from New York, we got a five-day pass, and we had each wired home. I had $711 in my pocket, and Jerry had about the same amount, and we were on the train going from Norfolk, Virginia to New York, and we heard there's a special announcement that the war was over. The Japanese had surrendered. So we go into Penn Station in New York that night. Can you imagine about midnight? And, boy, it was just wild. I mean,
You're not going to try to tell me you're the sailor in that picture kissing the girl, are you?
Hey, I don't know. I kissed a couple. And they kissed us. They really, I mean, they just mobbed us.
Well, you would have had your Coast Guard blues on.
Oh, yes.
The white Navy bell bottoms.
Yeah, no. We had.
I make that crack because there are several guys who claim to be the sailor in that popular Eisenstadt photograph from 1945.
No, but I mean, you know, they just, all the way back to the hotel. I can't remember, but I mean, they literally mobbed us. I mean, all the servicemen were being mobbed. I mean, and hugged and kissed and whatever. And so we spent our 5 days there and then went back to Norfolk, Virginia. And between Jerry and I, we didn't have enough fare that we had to hitchhike back to the ship.
I guess you really did have a good time in New York.
We had a ball. In fact, we went into one restaurant, and of course, I'm a kid from Madera. You know, I'd never really been. I've been to Fresno one time from Madera when I enlisted. And so we go into this restaurant, and the maitre d' comes up and says, you have a reservation. And I see Jerry hand him a $20 bill. And the guy took us to the table. And I thought, oh, wow. I mean, $20 just to seat us?
And yeah, in 1945, $20 is a lot of money.
To a Coast Guard, yeah, that was a lot of money.
Was
but
it worth it?
We had a ball. And, of course, we were treated royally. I mean, because anywhere we went, I don't know why we spent all that money. Because everywhere we went, and, of course, I didn't drink. Jerry was a teetotaler, kind of a teetotaler. But I never drank in the service.
Well, and, good, because then you really would have been out of money. If you
yeah, had. We really would have been out of money. But we spent it somewhere. I know we went to the races once.
So how did you get all the way back out to the West Coast?
Oh, no. This was going back to the ship in Norfolk.
Oh, you still had to go back to Norfolk?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Then, oh, now we decommissioned.
And you had some more time in. Probably.
Oh, yes. We decommissioned in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a chance to go move up to chief. If I would have gone with the people that had got the ship, it was the Army, I think. If I would have gone just taken the ship from New York to wherever they were headed, I don't know. But I could have gone up one rank. But I had been in long enough. I was anxious to get home. And so they decommissioned in New York. And I took the train home. And I can't remember how many days we were aboard. I don't remember the thing, just except when I got back to Madera.
What was that like?
Well, again, it was just like being in New York. You know, everybody really treated us wonderful because the war had just ended, you know, not too long. And
I imagine your folks, like every American family who sent a young man off to war, much less four young men off to war,
right,
had to be pretty relieved to have you home.
Yep. My mother swore that if all the boys came home, were Catholic, and our little St. Joachim's Church, the path to the altar, I would guess, was at least 100 feet, 150 feet, and the stairs were about 20 stairs. And my mother swore that if we all came back safe for God, she would, on her knees, go up those stairs and all the way to the altar, and she did.
Wow. Well, you answered my next question. All four of you guys came home.
Right.
Did you all come home? Were you the first one home, the last one home, somewhere in between?
I was the last one home.
So they were all waiting for you?
They were all waiting for me. My brother, Frank, you know, I keep saying four because I'm including my brother-in-law, Jim. Actually, there were three brothers.
Uh-huh.
My brother, John, he flew, and he interpreted. He was a lot older than us, and he had came home first. And then Frank, no, there were four of us. Frank was in Alaska, and he was the second one home. Tony was on the Enterprise.
Wow.
And he came home, and then myself, I was on the Admiral Caps. And my brother Tony, I have to mention this because God bless him, he died at 53 years old. He was a gun captain, and he had never gone to sick bay. See, I did. I had coral fungus, and I went to sick bay. So when I got out of the service, I got a 10% disability. My brother Tony would turn yellow, and his hair would fall out, and his beard would fall out, And then he died a horrible death at 53 years old. Mm. And but he had never, you know, he'd never been to sick bay, so he never got a thing.
Well, there's
so
a lot more cases
hero.
Like that out there. Absolutely. You're all heroes in my mind. And something tells me your mother was doing a lot of praying while the four of you were gone. And somebody was there to answer those prayers.
Oh, yes, she was.
Amen. Well, we need to catch our final commercial break of the program. But when we come back, the long-awaited singing performance by our guest today, Al Shakwa. I think we'll have him sing God Bless America. That seems very appropriate to me. So you'll hear that when Hometown Heroes returns on Newstalk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on Newstalk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ. Remember, if there's a veteran in your life that you'd like to tell me about, you think I ought to have him or her on this program, email me, paul@kmj580.com. Been such a pleasure this week visiting with Al Shakwa of Fresno. We talked about his participation in the Veterans Golden Age Games. He's got the medals to prove it. He's also competed nationally in veterans singing competitions. And I would love to close the program today with him singing a song that's very near and dear to his heart. He even knows the history about it, which some of you may not be familiar with. God Bless America goes back to a name that we all know, Irving Berlin.
1917, World War I. Irving Berlin wrote the song God Bless America. His director was not impressed, so Irving Berlin put the song in a trunk. In 1938, Kate Smith's director came to him and asked him to write a patriotic song for her. He couldn't come up with one, so his secretary said, Mr. Berlin, how about the one in the trunk? And that was the birth of God Bless America. He added a verse, edited a few lines, and here is God Bless America a la Kate Smith.
And we could play Kate Smith's recording, but isn't it much better to hear it live right here in the flesh from 82-year-old Al Shakwa? And here's your cue.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us pledge allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer. God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountains to the prairie, to the ocean, white with foam. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home, sweet home. From the mountains to the prairies, to the ocean, white with foam. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home, sweet home.
I think there are a lot of folks around our valley singing along with you there and probably applauding at the end of that. You said you like to see your audience. I know you couldn't see them that time and they couldn't see you, but if they could see you, they would have seen your red, white, and blue shirt that you're wearing today. And it's very clear from our conversation over the last hour that you do love America, and you're thankful that God has blessed our country and blessed you, brought you home from the war, 3 children, 6 grandchildren. Sounds like you have quite a bit to be thankful for.
Lovely wife.
58 years, though. That's
58
it,
58
huh?
years, yep. She's put up with me all that time. She said she'd like to have somebody younger, Paul, and if she's looking at you, she'd probably choose you, but she said she hasn't got enough time to train you.
Well, she knows I can't sing like that either. Well done, Al, well done.
And thank you, Paul.
And I know that the veterans at the VA Medical Center who you sing for so often really appreciate that. Now I understand why after hearing it in the flesh. That was live on our program. That's a first on this program, live singing here on the program, but very well done, Al. We're just about out of time for the show today, but I want to thank you, not just for serving our country, but for remaining so proud of our country, for sharing that patriotism with those you know, and for serving so many veterans around our valley. That is an inspiration, and I know that I'm sure that your children and grandchildren are proud to have you in the family.
Thank you, Paul. It's been wonderful, and I really appreciate you calling me.
All right. Well, that is Al Shakwa of Fresno. You didn't even say anything in Italian this whole time.
Oh, come si dice, amore a tutti le gente che sono sentitemi, e io ti canto per te, per il cuore. Amore, cari, ciao.
You said you love the people of America, is that what you said?
I said, thank you, all the people in America, and I love you all, and I'm saying with love for all of you, thank you.
I think they'd all fire a molto grazie right back at
molto
you.
Molto grazie.
We're out of time on the program today. That's Al Shakwa of Fresno. We'll be back with another edition of Hometown Heroes next Sunday here on News Talk 580 KMJ.